Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and some other related topics. I am one of your hosts. My name is Alex Croson, and I am aside my co-host, as always, Mr. Casey Clapp.
Hello there. This is Casey Clapp.
Sorry, did I peek? That was too much.
No, you didn't peek. You just, I got a little, you gave me some goose pimples.
I was trying to go do the, I don't know, like the racers. Here comes Johnny, you know, and they did the run. What am I thinking of?
I have no fucking idea, if I'm honest.
I feel like there's something that...
Wrestlers?
No, you know what I think I'm thinking of? It was Greyhound dog racing way back when.
Wow.
I think I've seen a couple of those. My family used to do that like years and years ago. Like they worked at kennels. Like,
yeah.
You know, things. And I feel like I remember, so they had a rabbit. There was just like this little like fake thing that would go around the circle and these big, you know, racetracks.
It's like a little plastic rabbit that they send on a track on the
exactly,
inside aisle.
And I feel like I always recall that being like here comes this, and then like it would
I see.
Maybe I'm just completely wrong. Anyway, we're getting off topic. This is not rabbits and other related topics, okay?
It could be. That's our other podcast.
Oh man.
Two episodes.
This is a rabbit. This is a hare.
Oh.
Yeah. You didn't think I could do two. Yeah, we'll do a bonus episode on the jackalope.
Oh, I was going to say the jackrabbit might be I like jackrabbits.
Does that count as rabbits? Is that a subspecies maybe?
Oh, gosh. Somebody email us.
Please email us. We would love to know.
They were already starting on their draft.
They're already a paragraph in.
Yeah. Casey, we have a lot to talk about today. I'm not going to lie.
That's reasonable. I don't like it when you do.
And you know this as well. And we... are covering a pretty cool tree today.
Yes, we are.
A pretty old tree.
I think it's old and cool. Can you be, as some of my Frisbee friends would say, old but still lit?
Well, we've talked about fishing for episode titles before. that one jumped in our net.
Yes. All right, we'll do it.
Casey, today we are talking about the Great Basin Bristlecone Pine.
That's right, we are.
What a name.
You're welcome, everybody.
We talked about, before we started recording, we talked about... basically, I got confused, and then I got double confused, and then my confusion folded back in on itself to create a quad confusion.
I would say that your confusion supernovaed.
Yeah, it was a bit of a dwarf. What is that called? A hot dwarf?
Ooh, yeah.
It's not hot dwarf.
I think it's a hot dwarf. Is that name number two? I think it is.
And so basically, the sort of impetus of my confusion, as we would say, was that we're covering the Great Basin Bristlecone Pine.
That's right.
And then you said, no, wait, let's do the... What was the other one?
The other one was the Rocky Mountain Bristlecone Pine.
Yes. And then you said, no, wait, let's do this third one.
The Intermountain Bristlecone Pine.
See, and then I discovered...
that there's also another species entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one is the Balfouriana, the foxtail pine.
Yeah. Too many.
There's too many
trees. We need to, you know what? This is going to be controversial. We need to get rid of some of these trees.
Wow. Let's just go burn down these ancient forests because you know what? They're too complicated in their naming.
That's right. You can quote me on that.
All right. I will.
We are talking Great Basin Bristlecone Pine.
Exactly. Also known as the Intermountain Bristlecone Pine, the same species, which is Pinus longeva.
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 Oh, which possibly... Does that come from longevity?
I think it does.
Because this is Alex. This tree is old but lit.
Yeah, it's old but lit.
But still lit.
Yeah, it's still lit as lit AF.
Yeah, man.
Is that can I get? Yeah, all right. Our millennial checked on it. That's that's good.
Can we get a millennial? I guess we are millennials.
Yeah,
whoa,
we technically are.
That just tripped me out because I was like, what's younger than a millennial? Casey, let's imagine that you and I, like every episode, are walking in the Great Basin, about 11,000 feet in the air.
That's right.
And we come across some Great Basin bristlecone pines.
Oh, and you're just stunned, yeah. Alex. There's no question.
We both become catatonic. And when we come to, I say, Casey,
what am I seeing?
Tell us about this tree.
All right. So this tree is spectacular. There's no other way to possibly put it.
It's true.
But we'll start with the little things and we'll get to the big things because I think that's the best way to describe it.
That's great.
So you're looking at the little things. You're saying, well, what is this tree it's going to look like? You grab a little bunch of needles. You shake hands with a tree.
Mm.
The first thing you notice is that there are a lot of needles and they're in bunches of five, fascicles of five, split up into these very like tightly bunched needles.
Yeah.
And so as all the things that are in the true pine genus, Pinus, they have needles that are in bunches of two, three, or five.
That's right.
Except for a couple things that have just one needle, and that is probably what used to be two needles or some other amount of needles and have fused back together.
Oh, wow.
But each one of these needles, all the five, the three, or the two, they are essentially one needle that splits into five individual needles, right?
Sure, because they come from the same... Give me a moment.
Yes.
They come from the...
You got it.
Oh, my God. What is that
starts
called?
Starts with an F and rhymes with fascicle.
Fascicle?
That's it. Yeah, one fascicle. So, wow. Great work.
Really led me to the water there. Thank
you. Hey, you know what? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't lead Alex to technical tree terminology.
It's true. You bastard.
Sorry.
A fascicle. They come from the same fascicle.
Exactly. So they all grow out as this one thing, then they kind of split up and open. The only thing is on, like, let's say the sugar pine or the western white pine.
Mm-hmm.
Those five needles will open up and be very sort of, they'll be very different from each other. They'll open up and they'll be very like poofs coming out, right?
Okay.
Whereas with this tree, the bristlecone pine, they stay very tightly packed together. Their needles do not open up wide. They stay really close to each other. So it almost looks like they are one needle just kind of really tightly pulled together. And this helps basically keep them warm, really, is the thing. Helps keep them warm and helps reduce the surface area that is absolutely just thrown out there to the wind. So everything creates a little tiny microhabitat.
Right.
I'm sorry, not microhabitat. Microclimate that helps keep them just the smidgiest warm and doesn't have enough water that goes over the top. Enough wind that goes over the top.
What's the difference these days?
What is the difference? Seriously.
That's kind of adorable that they stay together to stay warm. They're like penguins.
They do. They are. Exactly. Not only that, Alex, but they keep their needles all the way down for about 20 years.
Mm.
So not only are the individual five needles sticking together, they also stick with all the other individuals of five needles that are all down the entire stem.
Now, are these are these alternately arranged?
No, they are spirally arranged because everything in the pine family is always going to be spirally arranged down that main stem.
Oh, are pine cones also spirally arranged always?
I guess they would not be spirally arranged in the sense where you have like they don't come out so consistently where you can find that spiral.
Yeah,
it's kind of like it keeps going, then one pops out over here, and they usually come out at a certain place.
Oh, I'm sorry, I meant the scales on a single cone.
Oh, yes, exactly. Correct. Yes. The scales are also all are spirally arranged down that central axis.
So that's a good thing to remember. Pine trees, an ID characteristic, look for spirally arranged components.
Yes, exactly. That is precisely right. Yeah, so they're more or less going to be spirally arranged going all the way down the stem, but they're so tightly packed and it's just so hard to tell where it really doesn't help with the ID characteristic,
yeah.
Except that you can see that there are needles going down way further on the branches than you'd ever expect. It looks like they are just these furry limbs with these really tight needles all the way down, literally for the last 20 years of growth, which could be 2 inches, or it could be, you know, a foot and a half. Well, anyway, these trees, speaking of their cones, mm-hmm. Alex, they are bristly. Each one of their spirally arranged needles, or I'm sorry, cone scales. There's too many things we're talking about right now.
There's so many components.
There's so many. Each one has a little teeny tiny barb on the very end of it, which makes it not really sharp. Like it's not going to hurt your hand, but you can feel it and you're like, well, yeah, there's a bunch of little pokey things on it. And those are at the end of each cone scale, right at the very end. Again, this is one of our favorite terms, an armed umbo.
Yes.
Right at the very tip of each one of those scales. And that makes it so that the cones are effectively blocking little creatures from getting into them too early. They also will be covered in sap, and they're maybe 4 inches long, maybe 1.5 inches or so wide, and all of their cone scales are really tightly packed.
Yeah.
They're not so spread out to where things can just wander in. They're very well protected, and they're protected because, Alex, where they're growing, like you said, at these super high elevations in these really dry, deserty-like area, the whole area is very resource poor. So these trees are like, this is a lot of energy I'm putting into these seeds. I do not want everything to eat them.
Right.
So they are packed together with sap, constantly trying to keep themselves closed up until it gets hot enough to where they can just drop a seed out and those cone scales open, or have a bird, like let's say the Clark's Nutcracker,
aww,
a lovely little bird that comes in and eats a lot of the seeds from these high elevation trees like the bristlecone pines and the limber pines and white bark pines.
Mm.
They will just go in there and they'll open the seeds or open the cones and then stick their tongue in, pull the seed out, and then the Clark's Nutcracker will actually scatter hoard these seeds around in different areas so that it can find these caches later in the wintertime full of seeds. Yeah, and that's what it does. If the bird dies or maybe goes away, then some of those seeds will germinate and you get these groves of bristlecone pines in areas that have now been dispersed by birds.
Right.
But of course, the trees don't want this because if the birds is successful at what it's doing, it's going to eat all those caches. So the tree really loses out unless something happens to the bird.
I would imagine also, and this is a theory of mine based mm-hmm. on no knowledge.
Hey, this is the place for it.
That's right. I would imagine these young seeds in these young cones probably taste better because they're like fresh.
Oh, yeah. I would guess so.
Don't you reckon?
Yeah, probably.
Casey, let's tark bark.
Hark.
Hark. We're talking, tarking bark.
That was me trying to say okay, but with an A, and that didn't work out.
Well, turned into a different word that already exists. That's good.
Well, the bark on these trees, if you're looking at it, it's actually like a kind of brown, not very scaled, not very furrowed, just kind of a brown standard issue tree bark, you know?
Yeah.
It'll have these little cracks in it that develop as the tree expands and things like that. But for all intents and purposes, it's kind of some boring old bark. It's not very hard. It's not very soft. It's just a very good protective layer.
Yeah.
But one thing that's striking about these trees is that if you get an older one, and I mean by older, it could be anywhere between 100 and way, way, way older. But these trees that live for so long up there, they get battered by such things as hurricanes, as a bunch of sun. I guess it's not a hurricane. That's not quite the right term.
Snowstorms.
Yeah, a big snowstorm, and they get battered by the sun in the like absolutely like hottest times of the summer.
They're extremely close to the sun.
They really are. They're like the Icarus of the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, they will get sections of their bark killed off by something.
Yeah.
Maybe it got struck by lightning. Maybe there was a snowstorm. Maybe it got just ripped off by, you know, something. Who knows what happened? But that section of bark will die. The wood does not decay.
Right.
It just sits there because there's no decay organisms that are up there so prevalent that it can just start to happen. The conditions are so dry and essentially just cold or really hot that it's just not a good place for decay to exist, period.
Wow, that's fascinating. So there's not like there's no mycorrhizal activity going on up there.
Now, I'm sure that there is in the soil, but there's not like the decay fungus that you'd find out here if you just go into our rainforest situation.
Uh-huh.
The best thing for fungus is like warm and moist areas. So if you have either hot or cold and never moist, you're just not going to have a good habitat for these decay organisms to exist.
Oh, when I said mycorrhizal, I guess I was making a bit of a faux pas because that's soil.
Yes, exactly.
Mushrooms.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm sure that they're here.
Fungus.
Because these trees live in such, you know, rough conditions up in these elevations, where if they did not have those fungal associates helping them live, they probably would die. But those fungal associates are in the ground, and maybe they'll send up their mushrooms every now and then.
I see.
So I'm positive that they're there in terms of mycorrhizal fungi, but the decay organisms, they are not present up there, or at least not present in such a in such numbers that they cause these trees to decay.
Gotcha.
So you can have an old tree that is just sitting there with half of it dead and bleached by the sun over literally potentially millennia of this standing tree with one side of it completely alive, one side of it completely dead, and the tree will just keep cooking.
Yeah, these trees, I've noticed from every... I've never seen them in real life. Actually, I want to.
Yeah.
I want to go to the Great Basin.
Highly recommend. It's so beautiful.
These trees are extremely asymmetrical.
Yes, that's a great way to describe them.
They look like 50 years ago, the left side got fucked up, and then 10 years ago, the right side got fucked up, and like 1,000 years ago, the whole thing got fucked up.
Yeah.
Like they look like they are in a constant state of recovery.
Hey, that's a great way to describe them, yeah. Mm. And then at any one given time, they could have also had a fire come through,
yeah.
And they could be bleached. Because this side has been in the sun, it could not be bleached on the other side and be like this bright orange red wood because it's not in the sun, it's always in the shade.
Yeah.
Then you have the living bark over here. Then you have this other thing that maybe a fire came through, you know, 10 to 400 years ago, who knows when.
It's some serious off-grid living these things do.
Yeah, that is the best way to describe it. Because of this, when you see the bark of these trees, the bark is not always the thing that you're saying that you're seeing and be like, oh, I'm going to identify this tree by the bark. It actually sometimes is the lack of bark that helps you be like, okay, I can see that this is, you know, if you're sending a picture, there's no other trees that grow up at these elevations.
Hmm.
So you're never going to be like, well, is that this tree or is it this tree?
They're so distinct too.
Yeah. And maybe you'll get a white bark pine. Maybe there's a limber pine that look really similar that have these same things going on. We can talk about the differences in the cones of those two.
Oh, yeah.
Rather, of those three. The bark and the wood and how weathered the wood is all together is what makes these trees look so spectacular. They also don't get very tall, Alex. They are in such a harsh condition where if you have a 40-foot tall tree, it's massive.
Wow.
If it is 4 feet in diameter, which for any of the trees growing, even if you just go straight to the coast or straight to the Sierra Nevada from this exact location that we're talking about, the this Inyo National Forest, White Mountain, Bristlecone Pine Forest, the Shulman Grove, that area right there, if you just go maybe 100 miles to the west, 200 miles to the west, you'll be in the Sierra Nevada, and a 4-foot ponderosa or Jeffrey pine, whatever, dime a dozen. You can see them all over the place.
Right.
So this tree, though, it takes it millennia to get that big. They grow so slowly, and they get set back all the time to where in order for them to actually put on that kind of girth, these trees have been living for sometimes, and I kid you not, one single tree more than 5,000 years.
Absurd.
Let's do the math on that real fast.
Okay.
2,000 years ago, what was going on? Christ was walking around. He was talking to people. He was having them do all sorts of things. He was performing magic and doing all sorts of cool stuff. The Romans were in control of everything.
Magic.
The tree that I'm talking about, which I can't remember the name. I'd have to look it up. It is, they've been measuring these trees for many, many years, right? And they are trying to find the ones that are the oldest. They used to find one that is, I think, 4,500 years old. We'll talk about that in a little bit.
Okay.
But then recently they just kept looking and they found one that is over 5,000 years old. And that was the thing. They wanted to see if they could do that.
Wow.
So that tree that is still living today, 2,000 years ago, when the entire world that is Central Europe, which for those people was the entire world, this tree was already 3,000 years old.
That's bonkers.
Now, let's go back another 1,000 years, or even 700 years, 500 years. We're talking like the Greeks were fighting it out with the Persians. The Persians were taking over everything. You go back another 1,000 years, and this tree is 1,000 years old. And there were Egyptians who were like, we should build a pyramid. You know, that would be kind of cool. Let's try that out.
See, that tree was born.
Yeah, let's go with it.
Around the time the city of Troy was founded.
Yes, allegedly. that city is so old, it might even be mythic, that it never even existed.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean.
That's a different podcast.
Okay, yeah, wow.
Hardcore history?
But yes, and so I'm just trying to do all this from my brain right now and remember, and so I'm sorry that I can't get exact dates of, you know, when the Chinese emperors are going on.
You're doing a pretty good job.
I really appreciate that. Thank you. Well, let's take then into consideration when the sort of accepted time that humans came into North America.
Okay.
Sometime, and this is going with like the Clovis, I think it's the Clovis arrow, Clovis man or something like that, where essentially there's one design of arrowhead that they have found and dated throughout Western North America. There's one spot in Eastern Oregon in a cave. I think it's called the Paisley Caves. Mm. And they found like human remains. I think it's petrified poop. I forgot what the term is for that. So they found, they're like, okay, people were here, we're pretty sure, like 14,000 years ago. So if people were just then walking down through and over after the last ice age ended, and they're cruising around Western North America, going east, going south into South America, mm-hmm. this tree was 5,000 or is 5,000 years old. If it was created by another tree that put out a cone when it was 5,000 years old,
right?
And we keep going back, the generations of this tree since humans came to North America, like these species, way before any colonization in terms of like European people,
uh-huh.
this is literally the first steps of bipeds coming onto this continent.
Yeah.
There's only been three generations of this tree.
That's wild.
Three!
Ah! And Casey,
it just blows my mind.
We're going to talk plenty more about the age of trees. Hey, with a capital A.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to do it.
Plenty more after the break. We'll be right back with more Completely Arbitrary.
Hi, everybody. Or should I say, hola a todos. I want you to hear something. It's this. Yes, that is the sound of learning a new language with Babbel. You have, of course, heard of Babbel. You maybe even used Babbel. But if you haven't, Babbel is an app that helps you learn languages. Babbel is a science-backed learning language app that actually works. Let me put it this way. I knew somebody who used a different language app for 365 days and still could not even have basic conversations in the language they were learning on that app. Babbel is not this. They have quick 10-minute lessons and they're handcrafted by 200 language experts, so you can start learning a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Because it's designed by real people for real conversations. In fact, a recent study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. And of course, the best way to learn a new language is immersion. You go and live in the place where the people speak the language you're learning. You speak to the people, they speak back. But the second best way is Babbel. And it's practical. It will very quickly teach you how to order food, ask for directions, speak to shopkeepers, without having to consult language apps while you're on vacation. And here is a special limited time deal for our listeners right now. Get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for Fungal Associates at babbel.com/trees. That's right. If you're listening to this, if you're a fan of this show, babbel.com/trees, get 60% off your subscription. That's babbel.com/trees. Rules and restrictions may apply. Adios. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Hi, everybody. It's Alex here. And you know what? Come springtime, those trees are a-bloomin'. Those people are a-walkin' around. That sun is a-shinin'. And it makes me so grateful for my social life. People are wanting to do things again. And it can be extremely rewarding to start to see friends more often and, you know, go on cute friend dates or romantical dates, sit on a patio and drink a coffee, ooh la la. But it's really easy to overdo it. And for me, it's very important to keep an eye on my social battery. Every time I go on a social outing, I come home and I'm like, wow, I am really tired in a very specific way. Well, that's my battery. That's my social battery being drained. And I didn't really have this language until I started going to therapy. I didn't know why being around people made me so exhausted, even though I love those people and enjoy being around them. But therapy helped me with my self-awareness and helped me unlock some language that I didn't otherwise have. And if you are struggling with feelings and thoughts that you don't understand, therapy can be a great way to unlock the power of understanding. And a great way to start is BetterHelp. It's completely online and it's designed to be super convenient and flexible, which is very important. How many times have you had a therapy session on the calendar and that time rolls around and you think, I gotta drive all the way across town. I am not gonna go. It has, of course, happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to everybody who's been in therapy. No worries with BetterHelp. It's all online. And all you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist, of course. And nobody nails it on their first time. It's like going on dates. You gotta find the right therapist for you. It's silly to think that the very first date you ever go on is going to be your future spouse. So you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. It's extremely easy. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/trees today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/trees. Happy spring!
Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the Great Basin Bristlecone Pine Tree.
That's right.
Casey, as you once famously said, something I will never forget, trees are generally really old all the time.
Yes, they are.
Today we are talking age in trees.
That is exactly right.
And a term that I know, and a term that I knew before we started this podcast.
Yes.
Dendrochronology.
Oh, I'm so happy that you knew that before. That's stunning.
Yeah.
I mean, not that you did know it. It's just, I don't know almost anyone who's ever even heard the term, much less like has any idea what it means.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, truly. let's define it first, and then let's talk about it.
Dendrochronology is counting tree rings and getting information from those tree rings, but going back way, way, way long periods of time,
yeah,
and then inferring things from that data.
And generally, one ring equals 1 year.
Yes.
Because most trees put on about a ring a year.
Exactly. Now, okay. There is, if you're in the tropics, those trees, they don't put on rings.
They ring in the new year.
Oh, God, get out of here.
Sorry, I had to get that in.
Yeah, I guess you did. Well, no one's unhappy, but there's certainly no one that's happy.
I think there's at least one person. If you enjoyed that joke,
please send us an email. Well, The idea of dendrochronology is that you are making a chronology using the rings of these trees. You're exactly right. In the tropics, there are no seasons, so there are no tree rings that come, you know, each individual time. The trees just basically keep growing all the time.
I see.
There's no reason for them to have this kind of seasonality.
Oh.
Some trees, though, they'll put on maybe two rings a year because maybe they just get this really great wet and mild fall or something.
They and had then a
they
good end up, year.
They stick on another ring. Sometimes trees will skip it. In fact, some trees are more likely to do that where they just are like, nah, not this year.
Okay.
And they just don't put a ring on, you know? So this has been documented and it causes a lot of trouble. However, most of the time, you're exactly right. And the bristlecone pines are notably very good at doing this, where they will just put on consistently one ring after another every single year for well over 4,000 years.
Amazing.
Like 4,000 years is nothing to them. It's the next 1,000 years that you start to see them really drop off. That's where you don't see a lot more. But easily over 4,000 years of rings. Now, why these trees are so interesting is because they have, at least interesting in terms of a dendrochronology sort of perspective, is that they have, not only is there the area that they live just not really suitable for decay, they also have resinous wood that is decay resistant in and of itself.
Wow, right? Good for them.
So yeah, so it's a double whammy of let's not go away anytime ever soon.
Yeah.
Then you have kind of these three sections of trees that will, or these three kinds of trees that exist that they would use. And basically, you cut the tree down and you have this perfectly, you know, this flat slab. You cut it really low because remember, the first ring is put on when the tree is, you know, an inch tall, that first seedling.
Oh,
right?
Sure.
And then, but that is, you know, a quarter of an inch above the ground. Then every single year you get another ring, but they only grow outwards from that very first ring. So if you put on, if your tree only grows up an inch, let's just do an inch to call it easy.
Okay.
It grows an inch exactly over 10 years. We have 1 inch, 2 inch, 3 inch, 4 inch every year.
Okay.
If you now have a 10 inch tall tree, right? Make sense?
Yep.
Okay. So if you cut that tree down and you give it another 100 years, then you cut that tree down at 10 inches above the ground, then you are missing the 9 rings before that. Does that make sense?
No.
Okay. So it grows as a cone. A tree grows as a cone, right? So the first year is just a straight line.
Okay.
The next year, if you want to just draw this diagrammatically, the next year you'll have 2 lines on either side of that first line.
Oh, a cone.
Yes.
The geometric shape.
Yes, yes. Where you have a new cone is put on the top of each individual, of the old cone, essentially.
Because it is not only growing up, it is growing out.
Exactly. But each time it grows out, it also grows up, but it does not grow out the same time that it grows up. Now this is really confusing.
Wow.
So this is the diagram that I've used 100 times. Usually would have branches, but we're just going to forgo the branches right now.
Okay.
So you have one line on the very bottom of your page. Then you put 2 lines on either side of that marking year 2 where that tree grew out.
Yes.
But because it's a circle, it grows out one radius one way, one radius the other way.
Got it.
Right? For one diameter.
Yep.
Then it also has one line added to the middle line. So now you have 3 lines on the bottom, 1 line on top, right?
Okay. Yep.
That's now year 1 with 3 and year 2 with 1.
Got it.
Now, do that same thing. Repeat that pattern 10 times as that tree grows up, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have 10 lines on one radius on the bottom, each one marking 1 year of growth outwards.
Okay.
And then as you go up, you have 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1 for that 10th year.
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So if you cut it, now if we go back to our 10-year-old tree that's 10 inches tall, if you cut it at the very top, you only count one ring because it's only grown 1 year at the very top.
Sure.
But then if you go down to the very bottom and you cut it down there, you have 10 rings because that bottom part has been growing out for 10 years.
Yes.
Because trees, again, only grow up from that apical meristem.
Right.
They don't grow from the bottom up like grass does.
Okay.
They just grow from the very top and add on another one and another and another and another.
Got it.
So when you're doing these dendrochronologies, they try to cut it as low as they can to capture all the rings, because if you have such a tree that's growing so slowly, even if your variation in where you cut is an inch or two up or down, mm-hmm. you could be losing, for a tree like this, literally 50 years of growth.
Oh.
Yeah. So it gets really like specific really quickly.
Interesting.
So they cut this slab off a living tree. This tree was called Prometheus.
Wow.
And according to the Wikipedia article, and I think I talked about this on Ologies way back when.
Wow.
Famous story, Radiolab also did a thing on this. This tree was 4,844 years old, and it was cut down. God, I know, you're just like, what?
Yeah.
They cut this down. The poor guy who did it was just so, he was destroyed by it. He was a researcher. He was trying to research dendrochronology, and he was boring into the tree with a increment bore, which mm-hmm. is a tool that drills in, pulls out a core sample of the tree, and you can count the rings from that.
Oh, that's how you do, that's how you test Parmesan cheese.
Are you serious?
Yeah, like nice. A cheese wheel. They'll bore into the side of it and bring it out and test it.
Oh my God, yeah, okay, that's exactly, they did a cheese wheel analysis of this Priscone pine. But these machines or these tools are really, really like specific and expensive. And he ended up getting two of them stuck. So he was like, well, he asked for a permit. Hey, can I cut down this tree? There's literally, you know, 100 trees directly next to it that looked exactly the same in terms of age, size, all this stuff.
Yeah.
It just so happens he randomly chose the oldest documented living thing that existed, cut it down to get his tools back. And then when he finished the counting, he was just like, oh my God. It destroyed him. Like he got so much like hate. He switched careers and studied something else entirely, like died, didn't ever want to talk about it. Like the poor guy, you got to feel for him.
Can I say something about this?
You may.
I think it's despicable that he like got hate mail and shit for this. So not his fault.
It really isn't. He got a permit. Like he went through the right things to do it.
Yeah, it was a complete coincidence.
It was complete coincidence. And the like environmentalists, like people who knew about this, like specific people who were like, no, we know exactly which tree this is.
Yeah.
They were really mad because they were like, no, this tree is known. We already knew this. Why didn't someone say anything? And it's like, well, all right, I guess.
Wow. Well, I mean, of course it's okay to be upset about it happening, but not targeting this man.
Exactly. And he was doing good work. Like he was doing research on these trees, you know, which is why we think they're so incredible right now. It was half because of his work, right?
Yeah.
So essentially, this was Prometheus. There's another one now that's called Methuselah. And Methuselah is 4,853 years old, according again to this Wikipedia. I'm just quickly looking it up because it's only a sideshow to what we're actually talking about.
Remind me
today.
Is that older than Prometheus?
No, it's just a little bit younger.
Okay.
Yeah, but there are other trees now that they have counted that are more than 5,000 years old.
Wow.
And so what is interesting is that if you have one of these trees, let's just say it's Prometheus, right? We cut that tree down and you can count back literally each individual ring. And that ring, or that ring count, is 4,844, representing 1 year each, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, each one of those rings, Alex, if it's a good year, it's going to be a little bit wider. If it's a bad year, it's going to be really, really tight.
Okay.
And this will be in a pattern across the entire tree, where you have maybe some years that are bad, some years that are really good, maybe a really, really bad year, and then it took it 4, 5, 8 years to like build its way back up to making big rings.
Sure.
You know? Either way, you're watching these different things, and this is all climate data.
It's like looking at a graph, almost.
Yes, that's exactly it. We can say, well, how good was the year? And good would be maybe how much water, how much sun, did it get cold, did the snow melt? You know, these kinds of things.
Sure.
But now that's going back, and you can make some inference to what the weather was like for the last 4,844 years.
Wow.
This is off of a living tree.
Oh, the weather.
Yes.
Wow.
It was living every single one of those years. Now, next door to that tree is a dead standing snag.
Okay.
We don't know exactly how long that tree's been alive. We don't know how long it's been dead. We just know now it's dead, right?
Give me the 50 word or less definition of snag.
Ah, a snag
to
is
remind people.
A standing dead tree.
Okay.
Easy as that.
Oh, that was like
standing
seven.
Dead tree. It's three, Alex. I'm going to use up my other 47 words. It is a standing dead tree with a life.
No.
Sorry, I'll stop.
Never
there.
Give Casey a word allowance. he'll abuse
he'll
it.
He'll use every single one he gets. So, a dead standing bristlecone pine.
Okay.
you cut that down at the very, very bottom. And remember that we have these patterns where we can say, okay, how big and how little. Now, all they started to do is they said, well, we know this tree also has X amount of rings in it. Let's say it has another 4,000 rings. Mm. Then what they do is they would then connect those two and lines, those two graphs, essentially, of these trees, and they would move them around and match them up until the rings match perfectly.
Wow.
In terms of the thickness of those rings.
Okay.
Because each tree is essentially in the same exact habitat, the same exact soil types, the same exact everything. They're literally maybe feet apart from each other.
They might as well be identical.
Exactly. They're doing the same exact amount of work every single year based on how whatever's going on in the climate.
Okay.
So then what they've done is they have done that with the standing trees, multiple standing trees, and they've done it with dead trees laying on the ground. Now, you would guess over time, there's certainly going to be some amount of decay that's going to get in there. It's going to work so slowly, and these trees are just going to kind of almost just evaporate into the air, essentially.
Mm.
And then you have these standing dead trees and these dead trees that are laying on the ground. And they've cut into those. And they've matched up the rings, and they've ended up creating a chronology that goes back something like 10,500 years worth of tree rings that they can say with an exact line drawn from one living tree to maybe they've cross-referenced a few living trees, then a bunch of these standing dead trees that then go back even further into history, but they died maybe 2,000 years ago but are still standing. Then the dead trees that are on the ground that died maybe 7,000 years ago, but were 3,000 years on top of that. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And it just keeps going back. And I believe the chronology that they have established so far for bristlecone pines for essentially the White Mountains of California. So it has to be like, you know, a localized habitat and climate.
Mm-hmm.
10,359 years.
Wow.
So,
that's so specific.
I know. It's because you're counting individual rings.
Right. It's one at a time.
Yeah. You're not guessing. You know exactly how far back it is.
I have an idea.
Yes.
You know that book, A People's History of the United States?
Yeah.
I propose a book idea for you, Casey.
Oh.
Maybe we should edit this out.
Yeah. You know, okay.
A Tree's History of the United States.
That would be...
And about dendrochronology and the way...
How fascinating. Yeah. I think that would be a great idea. I feel like you could add in so many other things to that. Okay, yeah, edit this part out. We don't want anyone to know. And if you do want this to happen and you're a book specialist,
yeah,
send us an email because we've already copyrighted all of this.
Wow.
Well, so why is this important, Alex? Who cares?
If you're asking me, really,
yeah.
I would say I don't know.
Exactly, which is a perfectly reasonable thing to do.
Yeah.
However, there is other data that we have that we can also cross-reference with this kind of thing.
Okay.
So you know how right now there's a big thing that's happening? It's called climate change?
Yes.
Well, it just so happens that trees are made of carbon dioxide.
Okay.
They also will take in whatever carbon dioxide is in the air very specifically. And so what's interesting about trees and their relationship to their environment is that they respond every single year and document it every single year in terms of the width of their the width of their rings, as well as the kind of carbon that they put in here. So In the way that we carbon date things, are you familiar with the idea of carbon dating?
Roughly, yeah.
Well, essentially, it's measuring a carbon isotope. I think it's like carbon 14 or something.
Okay, I was not familiar. Never mind.
Okay. Well, so we have carbon in the air, and there's a very specific carbon isotope that is mainly, I believe, and this is where we go down to like 70% fact, because I looked up an article for this, and it was so like scientifically intense, I had to take a step back.
Okay.
But essentially, what we do is we measure the amount of this isotope in different things, in any given thing that has carbon in it. And we can measure what that carbon, or what the amount of that carbon is in proportion to other kinds of carbon, given its half-life. Are you familiar with any of the things I just said?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
So essentially, there's an equation that we can do. Say this carbon isotope will decay and become half of what it was every given moment, like this. And there's, you know, this big quadratic equation.
Yes,
kind of thing.
Of course.
And so we can mathematically figure out how much carbon is there now, and then measure what it is somewhere else. This is where it became challenging for me in the science of exactly how they do that.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, we can measure that carbon, calculate, and say this is X amount of years old, and give them an estimate. And that's based on what was in the air at the time.
Yeah.
And then as soon as that gets put into something hard, like, say, wood, then it starts to slowly decay in terms of like an isotomic or atomic decay kind of thing.
Got it.
Not a decay as in a, you know, a fungus.
Right.
So we can measure it like that. The same thing happens in trees. So we can measure the amount of carbon in each one of those individual rings.
Wow.
And we can calibrate the radiocarbon dating for other things. And they've done this in Europe on a bunch of different species, because they not only would use the bristlecone pine, but they will use old oak trees and old oak timbers that are in castles, where they say, well, we know this tree was cut down and built, or this castle was built, and they cut down the trees for that in 642 BC or mm-hmm. 640 AD or whatever we're using these days, common era, CA, CE.
Yeah.
So we basically can cross-reference all these different things, standing trees, dead trees, trees that were cut down at a known date, cross-reference all of these different things and say, okay, now we have a 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000-year-old chronology of this area in Sweden, this area in Poland, this area in Germany, this area in France. And we can then say, okay, now that we know all these things, we know how much carbon is here, we can now cross-reference other things that we've carbon dated, calculate that, and calibrate our machines, and basically use trees to make our histories exact and perfect.
Wow.
Nothing is perfect. I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. Near perfect. Yeah.
Close.
And that is just, it's a stunning revelation for me in terms of, you know, like, let's just say archaeology, right?
Yeah, that's incredible.
Where we can all of a sudden start using these trees to calculate things that we never really would have ever really cared about or even thought about. And now we can say, well, actually, we can use these trees and these interesting chronologies to count back and get like within a couple days or like a couple years, wow. Not days.
Oh, that was my next question. Sorry. Was how close can we get? Like months, I guess?
Yeah, I believe it's not necessarily months, but we can guess, because we have those things like, well, we're pretty sure that these all line up perfectly. Maybe we're off by a year or two.
Mm.
But these people are like looking at this in a scientific manner.
Yeah.
And then you can measure the carbon 14 in those things and say, well, actually, they're so close together that these are actually should be moving a little bit over here.
Mm.
But then you also have to say, well, maybe this tree that we're looking at skipped a year for some reason, you know? So it could go a little bit one way or the other. But there's like oaks that go back, I think, like 12,000 years. And 8,000 years. Like, we have different chronologies for different kinds of trees. And it is used in that case for archaeology, right?
Yeah.
But we can also use the reference for gigantic glaciers that we have in Antarctica or wherever, and we can drill down and we can get encapsulated air and carbon in the ice, and we can measure what those were, and we can figure out and build this entire long history as we get closer and closer to today with these new cross references of the trees. So the trees themselves are exact and perfect. The ice, we're pretty sure, is pretty good because we get layers of ice and snow, and we can calculate that down to a certain amount of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we can rebuild our entire climate for literally thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years.
Wow.
Back into history. And then we can use that data and we can say, hey, remember how we had this theory that the climate was changing because of this and that? We actually have like literal per year documented proof of this that we're not making up. This isn't a guess. We're not just trying to say, well, we're pretty sure because of the way the graph is going, we're going to extrapolate this data and say that this is probably more than it was then.
Yeah.
We can say, no, we have 10,400 years worth of tree that says this is the exact amount of carbon that was in the atmosphere, and this is how it was growing, and this is this and this and this.
Casey, a truly fascinating rabbit hole tumble.
It's crazy, right?
Through history. Let's move into our review.
I think that's fair.
Of the Great Basin Bristlecone Pine
well
tree.
Well said.
Or as I call it, the GBBCPT.
It does roll right off the tongue.
That's more mental power than I've used in days coming up with that on the fly.
Good work.
Casey, here's how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts on this tree and then give it a rating of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor.
Mm-hmm.
As our resident expert,
okay,
we will begin with you.
Alex, this is the definition of a superlative tree.
Wow. Yeah, that's right.
It is the oldest. We've talked about this before, right? The oldest kinds of trees like Pando, mm-hmm, and you know, other trees that we're going to cover surely, where people are like, well, is this the oldest living thing, the oldest living organism? Some will say it's the oldest sexually reproducing thing, you know? The tree itself, where you can look at one single organism, you can touch it and know that by just simply assuming that it's one thing, you are touching a 4,800-year-old organism.
Yeah.
That has seen everything. And just because I'm you know, a curious mind, it says that the oldest dynasty was the Xia dynasty in China,
mm-hmm,
which is circa 2070 to 1600 BC.
Okay.
So even one of our young trees here was at least as old as the oldest, like, Chinese civilization.
Wow.
The same thing, the early dynasty for ancient Egypt, and these are some of our oldest, like, civilizations. I guess the Sumerians were another one way back there. The oldest one was 3,150 to 2688 BC. That's the early dynastic period.
Mm-hmm.
So that's also extremely old, but our oldest of these trees is as old as from the very first ancient Egyptian, and it's still alive today.
Yeah.
One single thing. It's not cloning. It's not, there's no funny business. There's just walking straight over and saying, you're old. There's no question to it. This tree, Alex?
Yeah.
Is 10 out of 10. This is a 10 out of 10 tree. There's no question. This is a simple fact. I'm sorry. I know you're speechless.
I'm speechless. Casey.
It's the single greatest tree there's ever been.
This is your first 10.
I don't know if I'm going to ever have another one. I honestly don't
know.
But there's no way I can put this tree any less than that. I'm just such a fan of history, and this thing's watched it all. It's breathed in the same molecules that Caesar breathed in, that anyone breathed in between here and the first dynastic king of Egypt.
Yeah.
The same molecules have passed through all of them, and now us today still. Simply stunning. One single tree.
10 golden cones of honor.
This one's 10 out of 10 golden cones of honor for the bristlecone pine.
From dendrologist Casey Clapp.
That's me.
Casey, I'm stunned.
I got butterflies in my stomach right now.
I'm stunned at your score, but cones are your own.
Yep. Okay.
Here are my thoughts on this tree.
Okay.
I got to see one in person.
Yes.
I need to place my hand on it.
Yes.
And feel the ghosts of the ancients.
Yeah.
I mean, this motherfucker's got to be haunted.
They look haunted.
They do look haunted.
They feel haunted.
They are totally a haunted-looking tree.
Mm.
Old, but still lit and haunted.
That's right.
Man, oh man. I think the cones are fine. Nothing crazy special. I like the little barbs at the end. That's kind of a cute twist.
Okay.
The real masterclass happening with this cone is its age. With this tree.
Yeah, that's fair.
It has put all of its points into age and surviving.
Yeah.
I admire that.
Okay.
I think it's really a cool looking tree, and I think it's very cool and old. It's lit.
It's lit. Thank you.
boy oh boy. I'm so torn.
Hey, just remember, your cones are still your own. I feel like maybe we should start just saying them at the same time so that we're not worried about what the other person had said or would say.
There is a little bit of secondhand influence happening because I want to say 9.1.
Okay.
But in my heart, I'm immediately like, no, it's too high.
That's fair. Go with your heart, Alex,
all right,
and then tell me why.
This thing's getting an 8.2.
8.2.
Because I think it's incredible and
it's
beautiful looking, but it doesn't really get me going.
Really? Is it what is it missing? I guess is my question.
I'm not sure, Casey. Okay. We may never know.
Is there a majesty that it doesn't possess, you know?
It has plenty of majesty. I want to factor in the fact that I'm not feeling too passionate today about anything.
Wow. So this is a daily cone fluctuation here.
It could. I mean, yeah, of course. Okay. My cones are my own, you know?
That is. That's true.
So yeah, I'm going 8.2.
8.2.
And I would love to bring the melodica out, but I don't think it's happening today, Casey.
That's okay. That is fine.
I am so proud of you we found your first 10.
I don't even know. I'm overwhelmed by this tree.
As Alexis Rose would say, I love this journey for you.
Thank you.
Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary Q&A. Today's question comes from Emily Leedy.
Hello, Emily.
Hi, Emily. Emily writes, I'm reading The Hidden Life of Trees, and Woloben makes a statement about how much water a mature beech can course through its veins each day. That got me wondering, if people are about 2/3 water, how much of a tree is water? And then Emily did something very cool that I loved. They signed Fungally Emily.
Oh, gosh. Well, if that's not lovely, I don't even know what is.
It's extremely lovely. Thank you for writing us, Emily. Casey, how much of a tree is water? Pretty straightforward question, I would think.
Yeah, that is a pretty straightforward question. However, it can be a little bit misleading, I think.
Okay.
And the reason for the misleading is that trees are, they're a little bit different than us humans, I guess, in that they will have cells filled with water, and their cells will sometimes have water in them, but their older cells will actually like dry out and become very hard and woody and filled with lignin and other things. I guess lignin and other, they're called exudates because they basically get extruded out from other parts of the tree into these older cells, the heartwood and things like this.
Like an AeroPress.
Yeah, exactly. But what's left is the water is pushed outwards, you know?
It's not a perfect analogy.
It's not perfect, but you're exactly there. I'm feeling good about it. It's making me want another cup of coffee is what it's really doing.
Good.
But a tree will have a lot of water in it. And so I actually... I looked this up, and there's a lovely, again, an old, HTML website that I love. And it's from a research forester, Jay Hayek is his name. He's a forestry extension specialist, and this looks like he's from University of Illinois. Oh. And so I like scientists because they do science things. And this specifically is all about the dry and moisture-free kind of wood. So wood, you can dry it out, and it still has a bunch of mass, like a significant amount of mass, like the wood that we use in building is actually usually kiln dried wood.
Huh.
And it still obviously is really heavy, but there's no water in it because it's been dried out to where there's like such a small percentage of water that it's not going to dry out anymore and warp and things like that.
Okay.
So what they're noting is that you can look at it in terms of the mass of like the mass of individual atoms, you know, and that's what they did here. Jay did and said that trees are approximately 50% water by weight and 50% carbon at an oven dried weight. However, in living trees, they're way different because the living trees are actively moving water up and down. Now our cells are so much more floppy and things like that. Like they're filled with water, and that's what keeps them essentially pushed out and filled, like you have a water balloon. The only reason that water balloon is holding its shape is because it's filled with water. A tree and other plants, not all plants, but trees specifically, wood does not need water to hold its shape. It's cellulose and lignin and hemicellulose and all the long strands of sugars and starches that it has. That they get built up and they have these really hard cell walls, and that is what essentially keeps the tree upright.
That's what makes wood hard.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. However, The water is still moving up there, and there's still water moving in and out of these cells when they're alive. So as they die, water stops getting moved in them. Only living cells will be moving water up and down. Everything else will essentially be devoid of water, or if it has water in it, it'll just be like saturated, not really like doing anything.
Okay.
Not pushing it out. So that's kind of the big thing. If you take a human being and you just dry us so we have no water left.
Gross.
Yeah, we almost become like leather. I mean, it's just like anything
else.
Oh,
Lord.
Sorry, it's a bad analogy, but, you know, that's what the question I asked, okay?
I'm reading The Shining, and that is a little too close to home.
Oh, gosh, yeah, sorry. But, yeah, essentially, it's just our cell makeup is a little bit different, where we need water to keep our cells at a certain pressure to be moving around.
Okay.
Leaves are similar to that, because they don't have so much lignin and things in them that it actually keeps them upright. You know when you see a tree or a plant wilt when it doesn't have any water?
Mm-hmm.
It's because the pressure, the water pressure in the leaf is so low that it can't hold itself up.
Wow.
Yeah, it's called turgor pressure.
That is the fact of the week.
Well, there you go.
That's great.
Yeah, so whenever the plant, I've had some people be like, yeah, my plant tells me when it's thirsty by drooping. I'm like, that's
opposite.
So far beyond when it needed water.
Wow.
Yeah, that's when the tree is now unhealthy.
It's not opposite. It's like by the time you just think you're thirsty, you're already dehydrated,
yes,
that kind of thing.
It's exactly like that, but it's actually more similar to like when your tears dry up, that's when I know I need to drink some water.
Oh my God.
That's about what it's at with the trees. When they start to wilt or when plants start to wilt, the water pressure is so low because there's just nothing left. Like they can't even photosynthesize because they don't even have enough water to physically fill their cells to hold themselves out.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So it's really like that is not a good way. If that's your definition, is that if that's how you, listener, are figuring out when to water your plants, water them twice as often immediately. So in this case, in a living tree, it's more like 2/3 water by mass.
Hmm.
But that's only by mass because it's holding the water and it's moving it up and down and it's doing stuff with it.
Right.
It's not actually inside the tree. Once you dry it, the tree is still really heavy. But they break it down into, in dry wood, moisture-free, about 50% carbon, about 40% oxygen, and about 7 to 10% everything else, including hydrogen.
Mm.
But those are like built into the things because you have to think, you know, have oxygen and hydrogen, both those together, that's water. So when you actually have a living tree, it's like 65 to 70% oxygen by mass, 10% hydrogen. That's because you have H2O. So you have two hydrogens, two oxygens. Oxygens are really heavy. So it's really like, it's a challenging thing to come up with, but it doesn't quite translate perfectly, but essentially it's like 2/3 water is in a tree. And then when you dry it, that water all goes away, but the tree's mass is still really high.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not quite the same, but yeah, if it's coursing through the tree, the way that they're talking about in The Hidden Life of Trees, that is water that would count inside the roots, inside the stem, in the cambium, in that sapwood, moving up in the leaves and then getting evaporated out. And that is like gallons upon gallons, like kind of a stunning amount. You know, like when it rains and it's like, oh, well, there's like an inch of rain, like whatever. But then the water, like our waterways start to flood. You're like, what?
Yeah.
How is that happening? Like it was a tiny amount of rain. It turns out a tiny amount of rain over a huge area is a lot of water.
Right.
So with trees, all of their roots are going out collecting a minuscule amount of water, and then that's all getting concentrated in the tree, then going up and then going out the leaves. But if you just do the calculations and measure it, something like a cottonwood is like hundreds of gallons a day.
Wow.
Yeah, eucalyptus, they used to drain swamps
right.
because so much water is going through them. So that's the kind of thing that the question I think is really referring to. So the problem is, I guess my answer is they're not made of water in the same way that a human being is made of water.
Yeah.
So that the water is just coursing through it and being used in processes, not necessarily as something that is inside the cell, always holding it open and used to keep it alive. Although
right.
it also is to a big extent.
The difference in that analogy, the reason it doesn't quite work as perfectly as we wish is because the water in the human body is in the cells.
Yeah.
And in a tree, it is like between the cells.
Yeah, exactly. And it's being used and being passed amongst the cells.
Right? Yeah.
But they do, you know, they do have X amount of water in the cells just to make things, you know, work.
Right.
But the cells themselves do not need the water to hold themselves up other than the leaves. That's all done already. When they were built and lignified.
Thank you, Emily, for your question. If you have a question for Casey about trees, email us at arbitrarypod@gmail.com or check us out on Instagram at arbitrarypod. That's ArbitraryPod. Or you can support the podcast on our Patreon, patreon.com/arbitrarypod. You can join the Arboretum, get two extra bonus episodes a month, or the Cone of the Month Club and get a unique cone sticker illustrated by an independent artist every single month. Casey.
Alex. I just said Alex, but my voice did not go. It was I just voiced the A and the L, and then my voice did X.
You had the right mouth shape,
yeah.
But you had no projection, my boy.
I didn't. Hold on, let me try again. Alex!
I thought you were about to scream into the microphone.
No. Just project into the microphone. Use gotcha. My lungs.
Casey, do you wish to live till 4,000 years old?
You know, a part of me does. I think that would be really cool. Well, yeah.
I think it would be torturous.
Yeah, I think it would be torturous. Now, the question is, would you like to live for 4,000 years in a place like the Inyo Mountains?
Absolutely not.
You're just, every now and then, some bird pecks all your seeds out, yikes. And you're just like, get out of here. But you can't move, and you just get to slowly watch all your habitat dry up and become worse.
Yeah, it sounds like hell.
Yeah, but you know what? They've been doing it for 4,000 years. Honestly, it's one of those things where these trees are like, I don't know, they've been doing it for so long. If it gets worse, are they just going to be like, been here already, thank right. you. 5,000 years, people. 5,000.
That's,
get a life.
That's part of their life.
Yeah, I think so. But if we kill them off, man, we're really in a state.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
With that, we say thank you for listening to Completely Arbitrary. We will see you next week.
We will see you there. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.